Hey there, I'm Verity Songon and this is the Confident CEO podcast, the show that takes you behind the scenes of starting and running your small or not so small business. We will cut through the misinformation and bad advice about starting and running a business and give you actionable tips and advice that you can implement to grow, scale and achieve your business goals. Let's dive in. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Confident CEO podcast. I am so super excited to introduce Nicole Elliott to you all today. Nicole is a conversion copywriter, and Nicole, I'm going to hand over to you to ask you to introduce yourself to our lovely audience.
First of all, thank you so much for having me on, Verity. Very happy to be here. So I am a conversion copywriter and messaging strategist. So essentially, I work with entrepreneurs, industry experts, thought leaders, small business owners, who are really, really great at what they do, but they might be having a hard time distilling that down into clear messaging and compelling copy. So whether website copy, email campaigns, sales pages, what have you, that is capturing their voice, the essence of their business, and most importantly of all, resonating with their audience.
I love that. That sounds so super interesting. But before we kind of dive into copy in too much depth, I would love to ask you, what do we mean by the term copy? Because I feel like it's a word that kind of gets bandied around quite a bit. So, and I have to say as well, whenever I hear the word copy, this is going to sound so silly, but I always think of, did you ever watch Never Been Kissed with Drew Barrymore in it?
Ooh, long time ago. Yes.
Long time ago, but she works as like a junior copy editor or copy.
Oh, did she?
Okay. She did. It was her job title in that film was something around being a junior copywriter or something. And whenever I hear the word copy, I have to say, I do always think of Drew Barrymore in Never Been Kissed. And I'm now dreading to think how old that film is. What is copy? What do we mean when we talk about copy?
Well, first of all, I have a beef to pick with whoever decided that copywriter was a good job title, because people always think I work in copyright law. Like, I kid you not, I just realized that after years, my brother thought I did something with patents. And I was like, I'm definitely not qualified to be working within law. So it's copywriter, W-R-I-T-E-R, not copyright, R-I-G-H-T. So we'll start with that. But just generally, I mean, there's a lot of different types of copywriting. There's a lot of different types of copy. But to give you the most general kind of look at it, copy is something that's written, or at least conversion copy, which is what I focus on, is something that's written with the intention of getting someone to take one specific type of action. So maybe that is a sale, like on a sales page, or maybe it's on your website. You're not necessarily trying to get people to choose to work with you right away. Maybe you just want to get them to book a consultation call. Maybe you're just trying to help direct them to the right page for them, help them figure out what service might be right for them. Maybe it's getting them to sign up for your newsletter. So there's a lot of different actions that you could be focusing on. And just generally, there is, I think, a bit of a misconception about copy in that it's about a lot more than just pretty words. There's a lot of background strategy and research and a really deep understanding of your audience and psychological principles and all that go into it in order for it to be like strategic, persuasive, and not just convert ultimately, but also actually connect with your readers as humans, which I'm assuming is what all your listeners want to do.
Absolutely, because we talk about so much about kind of wanting to build a community, wanting to build trust and validation for who you are and why people should be buying from you and not the next person in whatever you do. And you're right, you kind of, you want, how can I put it? There's a real difference, isn't there? When you go through a sales page and you feel like you're being sold to, as opposed to when you go through a sales page and you feel like you're being spoken to and like you're connecting with the person. And then you kind of think, oh, I didn't really realize you were even trying to sell to me, but I'm now at the bottom and I'm definitely clicking the convert button, as you said, into subscribing to the newsletter or whatever it is there. I know that you have got two ingredients to copy that converts and, well, connects, first of all, but converts? I've just like invented a word there.
I'm going to go with that one.
Converts. Yes, I was going to say you can copyright. There we go. You can copyright that one. But you do have these two ingredients to copy that connects and converts. So can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So on one hand, and I will say this first ingredient is the one that usually people just focus on. They tend to neglect the second one, though I say the second one's probably a little more important. But the first one is going to be focusing on your brand voice, or maybe your voice as an individual, if you're the solopreneur, if you're the face of your company like I am or like you are, and just your overall positioning. So that's going to include things like your brand voice personality, your value proposition, even things like words to use versus words to avoid, taking a look at your competition to see what the best differentiator to lead with might be, deciding whether or not you call your service a program versus a course versus a methodology. It really gets into the nitty-gritty. Figuring out how you describe and define your specific process. And if that's something you haven't done, I highly recommend doing that, as well as giving it some type of sassy, lighthearted name. So this is all kind of one side of the coin. And so that's really company focused. And that's going to be the side that is going to focus more on that human connection with your audience on the human level. Human. But then at the end of the day, as important as human connection is, we also want conversion. We're business owners. We want people to become customers, clients, to choose to work with us. So the second ingredient is going to be the actual language of your audience. So factoring in that audience perspective. And this is the part I see a lot of people leave out. So to do this, I personally like to interview my clients, or I interview my clients' clients, to get these type of insights. But there's a lot of different ways you can do it. Just the general idea is to go someplace where you can hang out with where your audience is hanging out. So that might be, you can send surveys if you don't want to interview them. The interview really is the best way to go. But if you don't yet have an audience or people you can speak with, you can, for example, take a look at reviews for your competition. You can take a look at like forums, subreddits, Facebook groups where people are asking questions related to what you have on offer. For example, for you, you might want to find a subreddit about podcasting. I'm sure there's plenty of them, and see what type of questions people are asking. You can even do something called, I did not coin this term, so I shouldn't get credit for it, but I don't remember who did, review mining. So for example, you go to Amazon and you search for reviews for a solution that someone might choose if they weren't to work with you, and then scope out the reviews to see what people liked about it, what they didn't like about it, what they feel like's missing. So for example, in your case, if people, let's say, didn't work with you, didn't get help with you on their podcast, they might read a book on podcasting. Or maybe they'd get some type of, this is where I'm going to show that I don't know anything about hosting my own podcast, but some type of specific, I don't know, toolkit for podcasting, or podcasting specific microphone or what have you. A book's probably the best option in this case. But when you're doing this, you're going to want to look for whether it's interviews, running surveys, browsing these forums. Ideally, you do all of them. The more research, the better. But you're going to look for patterns as far as the core pain points, benefits, hesitations. That's really important. A lot of people leave those out of the copy, addressing those. Finding out different ways people are actually using your product or service. You can get some really surprising insights here, because people might not necessarily be appreciating the parts of it that you thought are most important. What features surprise them the most? I mean, there's a huge list. And then the secret, this is where it gets a little more complicated, is being able to merge these two ingredients together. So essentially, you have your individual brand voice, personality, positioning to focus on connection, and then you have the actual audience language for conversion.
I love that. There's so much to consider there. And I think what I really, really like about what you were saying is it's really getting to know your audience persona, or your target audience, target consumer, call them what we will. But it's really getting to know that individual, because I think sometimes what we think our audience are looking for is not what they're actually looking for. And it's not until you start reading reviews that you're right. I bought a book actually on Amazon just recently. And being the kind of person that I am, I had to read X amount of reviews before I could definitely purchase this book. Why? I've got no idea, because if I was in a bookshop, I wouldn't do that. But I was scrolling through these Amazon reviews, and it was really interesting, because given the title of the book, there were people saying things like, oh, I hated it because it was all about this topic. And I was there thinking, well, did you not get that from the title of the book? And it's interesting the things that people do or do not pick up on. So I love this idea of going through and actually looking at what kind of language are our target consumers or target audience looking for. And I'm going to pick up on something else that I was really interested that you said, is actually acknowledging the hesitations as well, because I don't feel like we talk about that enough when it comes to writing anything in business. So can you elaborate on that a little bit more? How can we include potential hesitations in our copywriting?
Sure. Well, the first thing you have to do is make sure you have a good understanding of what those major hesitations are. So that's where actually getting out, talking to your audience, or talking to past customers, interviewing, asking them like, hey, what major questions did you have before working with me? Or maybe what hesitation did you have that almost prevented you from working with me? And sometimes you're going to hear common ones like price, concerns over time, but you're also going to hear ones like they're wondering like, well, is this something that can work for me? Do I have to have XYZ established in my business already? Type of thing. And once you have that information, you can then address it in the copy. So where you're actually going to put it is going to depend on what type of copy you're working on, for example. But maybe it's as simple as if you're running some type of program, you have a facts section at the end that is talking to those specific headlines or specific hesitations. Or if that there's a really, really big one like this one, you're just seeing everyone had, and it's one that people tend to have pretty early on as soon as they hear about your service. Like, let's say you have a particular service that's quite new. Like, there's not a lot of other people doing something similar. So people hear it and they're just like, well, this is nonsense. Like, how could this be possible? You can then address that in some type of headline pretty early on, or have like it dedicate a whole section just to that particular hesitation pretty early on. And then you can also have, we'll probably talk about this soon, but you can also add in testimonials that are speaking to that specific headline. That are speaking to that specific hesitation to make sure, because people, their BS detectors are going to go up.
Yes, definitely. And you mentioned testimonials. So yes, let's dive into that now, actually. Let's talk about using testimonials, because how can we even start talking about testimonials? I think probably what is the best way to try and collect testimonials? Have you got any thoughts on that?
Oh, yes. I have thoughts on the best way to get them as well as the best way to use them.
Oh, this is going to be juicy. I can tell.
Yes, it is. It's one of my like favorite quick win copywriting tips. But as to get them, so I will start with the worst thing you can do. Never just reach out to a client and allow them to give you an open-ended testimonial with any guidance. For one, it stresses them out. They don't know what to say. And two, it's not going to give you a lot of material to work with. So really what I recommend, again, is interviews, if possible. When I write things for clients, I interview their clients in order so I get that language for the message, but as well as to produce testimonials. But otherwise, you can send a survey with like some targeted questions. So that'll be things like when I'm doing these interviews or sending a survey, really what I'm trying to capture is the before stage. So before they chose to work with my client, as well as the after stage. So I'll be asking things, you know, what was going on in your life that led you to my client? What hesitations did you have that almost prevented you from working with my clients? What worries did you have? What other solutions or alternatives did you try? That's a really important one, because we're talking about addressing hesitations in your copy. If let's say they've already tried a million different solutions, they might be pretty jaded, and that's going to be a hesitation that you overcome. Or if there's another solution that people generally tend to think is a better way to go, you're going to want to make sure you're differentiating yourself and saying why yours is going to be a place to focus on. So there's all of this before stage. And then the after stage is obviously, what results have you had since working with me? What maybe surprised you by working with me? Or working with my client, I guess, in this case. What would be, if you were to speak with a friend, tell a friend about my client, what would you say? That can give you some really, really good, nicely summarized language to use. And then, actually, maybe I'm jumping ahead of myself here. So we'll hold it there. But generally, I would say interviews if you can. Otherwise, at the very least, a survey with some targeted questions.
Definitely. I think that's fantastic advice as well, about being really targeted about what information you want to gain from somebody. Because yes, I think we've all been there at some point or another where we've said to someone, can you give me a testimonial? And they kind of write you back these couple of lines, which might be something along the lines of, I took Verity's course and it was excellent, and I'd recommend it to a friend. And you're like, what am I supposed to do with that exactly? Right. That tells me nothing.
It's better than nothing.
It is better than nothing, but there's also not a lot you can do with it, no, really, is there? So yes, and I love this idea, because the more that you're kind of collecting, the more that you can then kind of, I don't want to use the word term pick and choose, but choose out the different bits which are relevant for the copy on your website for those testimonials. But then also, as you said, there might be bits that you're collecting that you're never going to use as a testimonial, but it's giving you really key information for what you might want to turn around if they have talked about hesitations or something like that. So I think that's absolute gold for anybody who's thinking, I have been collecting these one-line testimonials, or I've been asking people, but they just kind of say, I don't know, they check the 5-star review or whatever, and then they do nothing else. It's well, actually asking, what do you want from that testimonial? What mm-hmm. information do you want? Is it that you want something to put in a testimonial because you want that information to help persuade other people to join? Or is it that you actually want to have research for elsewhere in your copy? So I think that is absolutely absolute gold. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who are already thinking to themselves, listening to this episode, thinking, yes, I do need to rethink my strategy for how I collect testimonials. So once you've got all of this information from testimonials, how do you then use that in your web pages? Because I've seen a few different things happen. I've seen some people literally just copy and paste the whole thing. And then sometimes it can be a bit jarring because it doesn't necessarily work. And there are certain bits where I'm like, is that supposed to be in there? Or what's going on? Or they might screenshot it, but then it's also half of another conversation in there. So I would love to know your tips for once you've got an amazing testimonial, not just 1 or 2 sentences, but once you've got your testimonial, how do you actually include that in a way that's effective in your pages online?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think you definitely hit it a bit on the head before when you said something about picking and choosing, although I like to think of it as being able to write different variations for different purposes. So this is why, I mean, I know I keep harping on about interviewing, but it's just so powerful because there's so much you can do. But whether you interview, whether you survey, from there, like you have a lot of options that you can use. You just have a lot of content and such you can work with. So for example, let's say you have a segment on your website or maybe your sales page where you're talking about what makes a particular feature so great. Then because you have all this wealth of this transcripts from the interview, you have the survey, you can grab a little tidbit to follow up with a testimonial that's actually backing up what you have to say about this particular feature. Or if you are making some type of like promise with your headline, then you can follow up with a testimonial. You can search the transcript and see if you have something to back it up. But that said, it's a bit of a circle because best case scenario, you also were using the testimonials and these interviews to inform what went into that headline in the first place. So they actually can really mirror each other. As you said, like it's using kind of dual purposes in order to get you the language you can use as well as to help support it. But yeah, when you said people just copy and pasting, that breaks my heart because that's like the worst thing. I mean, I've been guilty of doing it pretty early on, kind of just like slipping in the testimonial exactly as they were delivered to you into the social proof slots on your website design. But kind of the way I like to think about it, you remember in like English class, our teacher would always tell us like you have to back up what you're saying, right? You can't just like say something and leave it. And it's the same thing with your testimonials. So, but obviously if you're just letting people give you something open-ended, then you don't necessarily have this way to use them. So you're not changing what they're saying necessarily. You're just pulling different parts from different parts of your interview with them to merge it together.
And that's so important. I love what you were saying there about almost going back to English class. I'm just having like a flashback of A-level English here. Back up. Why does it say that in the text, Verity? I don't know. It's open to interpretation, isn't it? Shakespeare. But anyway, apart from that, like horror flashback there. What I'm loving is how you're saying, like I said, it needs to be entwined there with the actual, the features that you're saying, the benefits, whatever it is, there needs to be that backup and using the testimonials throughout. Because I think for those of us who do not professionally create websites, it's very easy to fall into the trap of whatever, I mean, I use WordPress, but obviously there's Wix, there's so many, you get the kind of the content block, don't you? And you drag it in, or you use it from your template, and it's a content block, and it's got, I don't know, like the stereotyped two or three pictures, and then you put some testimonials underneath with the name. And it's very easy to kind of fall into a trap of thinking that is the way that you need to present your testimonials, because that is the content block that has been provided by this setup, by this example, or whatever. So hearing that, actually, no, don't just, yeah, I mean, have those content blocks by all means, but actually by using the testimonials throughout, because especially as I'm guessing a lot of people leave the testimonials till right at the end of the web pages quite often. So then If you're not getting that far, you're not seeing that social proof. And it's interesting that you said that, because I was on a sales page actually just the other day. I was looking at an online course, and the creator of the course designer, she had the title of the online course, and directly below it was a testimonial about how the person had achieved basically what she was saying you could achieve. And I was like, that's genius. I've never seen anyone do that before. Mm-hmm. I was like, how dare she not follow the format of shoving it all the way at the bottom right before the call to action to pay into the course. But it's that you're talking about, isn't it? It's making sure that you, because, well, it piqued my interest. I remembered it. So then how many other people are remembering that as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just making sure you're using them strategically, essentially. Before you drop it in, make sure you've given it at least a little bit of thought. Like, is this the best place for it? Maybe there's a part in the testimonial that's actually not relevant. A lot of, like, I try to avoid the vague language, like, the course was great. Like, that doesn't really... For a Google review or something, that's fine. But on your website or on your sales page, it's not getting you very far.
I get that completely. Right. We're going to be controversial for 2 seconds here, I think, because we cannot talk about copywriting without mentioning ChatGPT.
Oh, no. I knew it was coming. Yeah.
I'm so sorry, but we can't.
Everyone's asking.
We can't not talk about ChatGPT. No, what is... I'd love to know, what is your take on ChatGPT? Because I've got my own take. And I'll tell you my funny story with ChatGPT in a moment. But I'd love to know what your take on the platform is.
Yeah. I mean, I've certainly been learning more about it recently and testing just to see what it can do. Obviously, when it first came out, I was just grumpy about it. And I was like, no, robots aren't coming for my job. I'm not going to address this. But I think it does have, I think it has some really powerful uses, especially in terms of just like idea generation. If you're struggling with a headline, you want different words, it can give you like good starting points if you're feeling a little bit brain stuck. It's quite good for research as well. Like, best case scenario, you're able to interview these clients, conduct surveys, but maybe you're really on a timeline, like you just need to get to it. So you can search something within it, like top pain points for XYZ. And then maybe from there, you go talk to your audience if you pick one pain point to focus on and see how they talk about it. It's also, I've been experimenting using it for editing. I'm not totally sure. I think I have to do a bit more training with it. So that way it's editing in the right voice and stuff. But so far, all that said, so I think there's definitely uses to it. Like, I'm not going to pretend like there's not. It does a quite good job for reproducing content. Like, if you're doing something, I don't want to say generic because that's kind of harsh, but if it's kind of like a summary or like blog post, things that are going to be based on other content that's elsewhere, I think it can do a really good job doing that, because it's essentially a conglomeration. I feel like that's not the word I'm looking for here. I'm the writer, but sometimes
I know what you mean.
Writing is easier for me than speaking. We'll just make it easier.
It is. It's an interesting tool, isn't it? And I have to say, when it first came out, I mean, I obviously don't even work in copy, but when it first kind of like hit the headlines and everyone was like, oh, look at this. I have to say, I was dead like, oh, I'm never going to touch this thing. What is this all about? But I started kind of trialing it a little bit. And then my husband came home from work a couple of weeks ago and he goes, have you heard of this ChatGPT thing? And I was like, yeah, I've actually been using it for the last couple of weeks. I have to say, for idea generation, because I agree with you. What I love it for is social media captions as well, is to be able to say, this is my blog post. What kind of thing can you kind of generate? And also, I was playing around with it a lot. And then I did some blog posts as well about how podcasters in particular can use ChatGPT. Well, I was just curious about it. And yeah, I definitely see what you mean. It's got its uses, But at the same time, I was also on Facebook a couple of weeks ago, and I don't, if anyone's used ChatGPT, if you haven't trained it to use your tone and your voice and really be specific, it does have quite a generic way of giving you answers. And this person had clearly was just copying and pasting stuff from ChatGPT. Anyway, my husband came home from work a couple of weeks ago and he was like, have you heard of ChatGPT? I was like, yeah, I have. I said, do you want to kind of look at what some of the things that I've been playing with it and doing with it? So then we would guess it, we were just asking it random things and can you generate this? And can you just kind of try testing out different capabilities? And then we did kind of the thing that people do on Google, and we kind of like Googled ourselves on ChatGPT. So we said, what can you find out about us? Because we've both got very unique names. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm the only Verity Songkon in the world, but I've also never met Verity Songkon. So I'm guessing I'm the only one on Twitter, YouTube, LinkedIn, and what's the other one? I'm on TikTok. So I'm guessing there's not that many of us.
You're probably good.
So, but it came back saying, we don't know who you are, basically. And it made me feel very tiny inside. I can't remember what it said, but it was something to the effect of, basically, you've not made any notable achievements.
Oh, no.
For me to know who you are. And I was like, oh, horrible thing. But anyway, that's fine. Put that to one side. So then we did the same for my husband. And we said, can you tell us about? And then we entered his name. And it came back with actually stuff that was fairly accurate. So my husband's an ecologist. He's quite specialised in what he does. And it was able to tell us a bit of a paragraph about him. And we were like, I'm not sure if we were impressed or freaked out at this stage, to be quite honest with you. Now he's been published a few times for his work. So we were like, well, let's try and be clever here. Let's see what it does. And we said, can you give us some work that he is published? And like my first name, he's got quite a unique first name, so there's not going to be many of him in the world. And we said, can you show us some of the things that he's published? And it gave us completely fictitious references.
It just made them up.
It did. They were formatted in a Harvard style, a proper reference formatting. And it looked completely legitimate. And it was only because we were looking through this list and he was like, I didn't write that paper then. He goes, I wasn't even doing research about that topic then. So we were like, well, that's interesting. And then we looked a bit closer and he goes, that journal doesn't exist. And we were then sitting on Google. And honestly, it was fascinating, but also a little bit scary from the point of view of you then start thinking to yourself, well, if it can completely, I mean, in all fairness, the references that it generated looked credible because they were in a field that he works in and it was using the right keywords and what have you. But the journal did not exist. He definitely did not write that paper. And I was like, oh, this is a bit fascinating/dangerous.
Yeah, and it chooses to fabricate rather than just say, no, sorry, I don't know what he's written.
So I think circling back to your point, first of all, do search yourself on ChatGPT because it did give us a laugh how it politely
told me. That's my next step as soon as we finish today.
Honestly, it was how it politely told me, sorry, you've not done anything significant in your life for me to know about. I was like, cheers, ChatGPT, just squash me down. But yes, so first of all, I'd recommend you doing that just for a laugh more than anything else. But I think circling back to your point that it is a good starting point and it's good for idea generation, but it's probably not quite at the point where we can say, write me a sales page, copy the whole thing, shove it across, and hit publish. So I think I will say, when people have said, is ChatGPT going to replace professional copywriters, I'm very much coming down on the side of the fence of no.
Or at the very
least, not at the moment. At the very least, not at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anything, it'll just make the importance of actually putting yourself into your copy and your business even greater. Yeah. I mean, if you've been in for the online business world for a while, there's a lot of sameness and you kind of just get blind to all the marketing around you. So there's already been a bit of a trend to people just like telling more personal stories and being more honest, even if it's not necessarily all the most professional within their emails and such. And so I think if anything, that's just going to be more and more important because for the moment, ChatGPT can't quite replicate that. They can't replicate your own personal experience and stories. So
Absolutely. And I'm hoping that they wouldn't be, it wouldn't get to a point where it could, because then that would be a little bit.
I don't want to even think about what that would mean.
No.
What is the implication of that?
We'll all be living in some kind of episode of Inception or something. But
anyway,
let's move away from ChatGPT, because we weren't really going to talk about it. I was a bit nasty throwing that question in there.
Everybody does.
I would love to know, though, if we have got some listeners listening, and if they're kind of thinking to themselves, do you know what, I want to improve my website, I want to improve the text or the copy on my website, there's just something about it which I'm not feeling is right, maybe I don't want to hire out, or I'm not in a position to hire out, what are some kind of quick win copy tips that our listeners could take away from this episode?
I would definitely say to, probably above all, just make sure you're including both of those ingredients. So make sure you've done a bit of work on figuring out your own individual brand's voice and kind of how you want to come across your messaging. Though I will acknowledge, I know that that is very difficult. Even for myself, it was kind of a miserable experience. I always hate to admit this, but it took me like 10 months to write my new website. So don't feel bad if you're struggling with it. It's much easier to do it for other people. But it can be helpful to maybe talk to someone who knows you well, or even like have someone who that you entrust to interview you a bit, like just asking, so you can just kind of brain dump verbally about your brand and see what comes out from the voice from that perspective. But as well, definitely conduct some client interviews if you haven't, or at least surveys, or just spend time hanging out where your audience hangs out. It makes a huge difference. And make a spreadsheet, make a Google Sheet or something where you can take down some of those insights and then see what you can do to merge them into your copy. See if you're finding interesting language you can put in, see if there's a new hesitation that you should be addressing, what have you. Other than that, I mean, there's a ton of kind of quick win tips, but this one's actually a really easy one. So maybe we'll do this if people are feeling overwhelmed by all this chat or talk of ChatGPT and interviewing your clients and what have you. And that's actually just making sure you get your call to actions right. So we're going to talk specifically about your website, for example. But so the first general advice there is to just make sure you have a call to action on each and every single page of your website. And I mean every page, your about page, your 404 page at the end of each and every blog post. I remember not too long ago, I was on the about page for a marketing agency, and it was actually a really good page. It showcased their portfolio. They had an engaging story. They had a lot of community involvement. But then I finished the page and so I guess this is my caveat to the rule. Not only make sure you have a call to action, make sure you have a logical call to action. So I finished the page, and rather than them directing me to, I don't know, book a consultation, see more of their work, download this free resource, they have a short description where they were talking about a nonprofit they're a part of, which is great. But then the very final button on the page just says, learn more about this nonprofit they're a part of. And it just kind of is ending the conversation there. And again, it's great that they're talking about their community involvement, but you need to finish off the page on a stronger note, because then I wasn't necessarily a customer. I was just doing this for my own personal research. But let's say someone is a good fit for them. They now have to think about where they want to go next. And that's the last thing you want people to do. You really want to consider the whole user experience as they're going through. So they would really be much better off sending them to case studies, newsletter, consultation booking, what have you. So that, we'll leave that as one quick win. I don't know if you want more. I'm not sure where we're at for time here. But
I think that is a great quick win. I have to say, I am now mentally going through all of the pages on my own website, kind of thinking to myself, do I have a logical call to action at the end of them? Because I know what you mean. I've been on a few websites where you kind of get to the bottom and you're a bit like, what am I supposed to do now? Do you want me to buy from you, or should I just... And the minute you start scrolling around is the minute where you're like, actually, I'll just go to your competitor.
That's when you lose them. Yeah.
Exactly. You really do need to handhold people on the internet, don't you? And be really clear as to what you want them to do. Because I think you mentioned this earlier, just how much noise there is out there, on the internet. And also just how easy it is to click off that website and go to another website. And I think sometimes we forget that particularly on our own websites, particularly if we're designing out and creating our own websites, because we get to a point where we are so involved in our own business that you kind of get to this point where you think, well, isn't it obvious? Isn't it obvious what I do? Isn't it obvious why you want to work with me? Isn't it obvious what my service is all about? Because you're so entrenched in it that sometimes you do just need to look at the page from an outsider's view to go, I don't really know what I was on when I was writing that, or I don't know what was going on when I thought of that layout, because it just doesn't work maybe anymore. And I guess that's also part of that interviewing, isn't it? And that interacting with your potential audience or your target audience. And I've done this a few times. I've put pages in Facebook groups or wherever and said, what do you think I'm selling on this page? Or do you understand what I'm expecting you to do next? And if people turn around and say no, that's when you kind of realize that it's not as obvious as you thought at first, as you first thought it was. Go on, one more tip then. Have you got one more tip that you could give us?
One more tip. Okay. I guess this one's still a bit aligned with the two ingredients. But generally, if you have a lot of places on your website where you see that you're talking like with language like I, we, our, things like my passion is XYZ, I help people do ABC, see if there are ways that you can switch it over to more you language. So for example, I can think of a client of mine. They were an IT company for a very, very specific type of industry. And originally you landed on their website, and kind of their first section on their homepage actually led, their headline was something, you know, we help people, or we help X industry do Y. And that's just not a very powerful way to begin a page. So instead we switched it up a bit, because it's also, they're operating in an industry where not a lot of people know that they need their service. So we led with the pain points, asking questions like, hey, are you having this problem? Hey, are you having Y problem? And just seeing how you can switch it around so that way you are talking to them. Or for example, let's say you have a call to action to join your program, and join my program now is just what it is. See if there's a way you can lead with the you, or put a you in there. Maybe you're talking about that transformation or benefit or something like get everything you need to confidently launch your podcast, for example. Or what have you. And I mean, you're not always, you can talk about yourself on your website, of course, but if you're doing it, just making sure you're doing it in the context of what the reader actually gets as well. So maybe you have a spot where you mention, I have 2 decades of experience in the industry and I'm an expert certified in XYZ. Then follow that up with the so what. So you're getting in experience back to perspective and strategies proven to work. Obviously make that a little bit more fun and interesting, but just to give you an idea. So generally focus on the UUU language.
I love that. I think those are some really, really actionable tips for people. And I know that I'm definitely going to do this. I've got a little bit of spare room in my diary tomorrow morning, and I think I'm going to be sitting there going through, looking at all of my calls to action. But I do think that these are some really, really super actionable tips, which I absolutely love. Now, you do have a freebie, don't you, on your website? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I do, yeah. It's a free guide called 5 Quick Steps. It's a bit of a long name, but 5 Quick Steps you can take today to give your website copy a conversion and connection boost. So it's just 5 actionable steps. I have some before and afters that you can see, because I know sometimes when you're just hearing people talk about the tips, you're like, okay, that sounds great, but how do I actually implement? So I do have those examples in there. And I've been told that it's quite useful. So feel free, if you make some changes, feel free to send it my way.
Oh, I know. It sounds fantastic. I'm going to get it linked down in the show notes as well. So anybody who wants a copy of that, do just grab the link from down in the show notes. And otherwise, where can our lovely listeners catch up with you? Where do you hang out the most?
Well, my website, Nicole Elliott with 2 L's and 2 T's.co. That's where you can find the guide as well. Otherwise, I don't use social media for business purposes, but I am on LinkedIn. So if you just search Nicole Elliott, 2 L's, 2 T's copywriter on LinkedIn, you should find me. Otherwise, my LinkedIn is linked on my about page on my website.
Fantastic. And as I said, we'll get all of that linked in the show notes as well, so people can catch up with you should they want to, which I'm sure they will be, because there's been so many nuggets of wisdom in this episode. It's been amazing. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. I have really, really enjoyed myself, and I've learned a lot in this episode as well. So if I've learned a lot, I'm sure that all of our lovely listeners have as well. So thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Confident CEO podcast. Before you go, I would absolutely be overjoyed if you could take just 2 minutes to leave me a review in Apple Podcasts. Reviews are a great way to tell Apple Podcasts how much you enjoyed the show, and it helps the algorithm to push out the podcast to more people, thereby helping us to help empower even more badass businesswomen to grow their inner CEO and grow to be the confident CEO of their business that they can be. I love to shout you out in your reviews as well. So you never know, you might be hearing your name on the podcast in the next episode. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.